The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Happy Independence Day, and welcome to a special Beyond the Box Score edition of Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, joined by Jacob Gibbs of Sportsline, and a special guest, Dwayne McFarland from Fantasy Life. Dwayne, what's going on over at Fantasy Life? What have you been working on lately?
Oh, man. You know, it's that time of year where we're digging deep into everything. What are we not looking at? You know, we don't have training camp yet, so it's like, what can I look at and, like, overanalyze? But no, we have a lot of cool stuff going on. So I actually have just posted four different pieces over the last couple of weeks that's really, you know, around best ball. Like, best ball is all the craze now. So just really strategies for roster construction at each position this year. But also just did a big refresh on my top 250 ranks and half PPR for best ball. So that's all up. And man, we have all sorts of behind the scenes projects going. We got big data stuff going on. A lot of things I can't necessarily, like, say it all yet, because I got to make sure we got our timelines right. But believe me, like, it's I'm turning out the midnight oil over here to try to get stuff ready for this season so people can have some fun at Fantasy Life.
It is a really fun time of the year because we're going to start chasing our tails when we get to July, and it'll be the news that we have to decide if we care about or if we don't care about. And then we get into the season, and it's like, okay, Monday I do this every week, and Tuesday I do this every week. And we've got a little bit of room to breathe right now and kind of go over some stuff, maybe dig a little bit deeper, as you said. Gibbs, it is good to have you here. We've been working on this for a while. This show, kind of your baby today. So I want to start off just with you. Like, you know, people hear yards per route run, and they know yards per reception, yards per target. Why do I need to focus on this particular metric, and why is it maybe the best for wide receivers?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at correlation to fantasy scoring, it's going to be the top of the list. It's a topic that needs that has some nuance and needs some context. For more on that, we did a Beyond the Box Score episode with Matt Freeman and Pat Fitzmaurice, where we contextualize yard per route run data. So, for instance, two receivers versus three receivers on the field, that type of stuff is going to affect. And we're going to go into detail on that a little bit here. But yeah, the per route data is one of the most prevalent stats that I use. And I just, from following Dwayne, know that's the case for him as well. So yes, I've been super excited for the FFT Dynasty crossover episode, and to have Dwayne on particularly, like, this is just a treat for me. I'm so psyched.
Dwayne, we usually try to start off with three questions for the guests. And we're gonna the first two questions go into one. Who your favorite two dynasty buys based on per route data?
Yeah, so I definitely have a couple. There are a lot that I could go into, but you guys have a really good list going. But two I didn't see on the list, so I'm definitely gonna throw these out there. It's not time to give up on Antonio Gibson. So, like, when we talk about a player like him, you look at his targets per route run, 24%. But really, he's never been fully enabled to be the receiving back because we've always had J.D. McKissic, right? So it's been one of those weird situations where we all know this. We're like, the guy played receiver in college. When he's on the field, he demands targets, not quite at a Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara level or Austin Eckler, just a hair below those guys, but still at a level like that we get really excited about. And then it's like, well, you know, we've got J.D. McKissic, and then we got another running back, so there's going to be like three guys, and we've just never really been able to get everything turning right for Antonio Gibson, and he hasn't been able to be in that role that, you know, he's really designed for. Well, now with McKissick gone, I think that totally opens the door for him. And we saw his route participation last year surge to 57% once we saw McKissick out of the lineup with the neck injury. So now you're looking at Brian Robinson. Yeah, they drafted, you know, a guy this year that's really more in the vein of Brian Robinson. So I feel like he's really the only guy, unless Curtis Samuel's going to steal a few snaps at running back. He's the guy that's going to be out there on passing downs. Finally, won't be having to share that role. And this is really his opportunity to shine. And I would say this, like, I know people are burned by Gibson because we've been talking about this. Like, we've been Antonio Gibson, you got to get him. You got, and people are like, come on, dude. Like this is falling on deaf ears at this point, but no, finally for real, like this could be the time. And if we look back historically, the first thing, like, people will be at, well, man, there's no way he's going to get 50% of the rushing attempts. And you're right. But let me just give you a list of guys that have been in a similar range of targets per route run. But if they can get to that 60, 65% route participation, which is where Gibson should be, they didn't need to get to 50%. And I'm going to give them to you. And this is not me just filtering, saying I want to handpick. This is literally me filtering to guys that were at 40% or less of rushing attempts, and they got to a target rate of 25% or better and got over the 60% route participation. Here they are. Are you ready? Alvin yes. Kamara in 2020, RB1. Austin Eckler, 2019, RB4. Kenyon Drake, 2018, RB14. Deion Lewis, 2018, RB27. We'll take it, though. Christian McCaffrey, 2017, rookie season, RB9. Remember, you still have Jonathan Stewart taking most of the rushing carries there. And then here's a fun one. Here's a real fun one. You guys remember Danny Woodhead in 2015, right? RB3, baby. So there is a path. Not saying he's right. going to be a top 10 RB, but there's a real chance that you've got a top 24 running back. And we also see that these guys catch passes, dynasty lens here. Like, they can play longer, like, because even if you may lose some of your explosiveness, things like that, if you're padding your stats with the receptions, is something I really like to buy into. And people are just, you know, they're kind of out on Gibson right now. In best ball, he's going round 9, round 10. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what his dynasty startup is or what his dynasty stock is, but it's typically the things are still pretty close. So I think Gibson's a buy.
Yeah, I think down is the answer, is what his dynasty stock is from where it's been. I think that it's a lot of it is that feeling. And I talk about this a lot. Like, he burned me last year is not a valid excuse for not drafting a player or rostering a player this year. I understand why people do it, but like, we know enough about this game that these things don't remain stable. I do, and I'm going to go to Gibbs on Gibson because I know he's been hurt by him in the past. He is one of those emotionally scarred former managers. But when it comes to running back, and one of the things that, as far as I understand, like, one of the major benefits of yards per route run over yards per target is it shows how good the player is at earning targets.
Yes.
Is that as true for running backs as it is for wide receivers, or are running back targets more scheme, quarterback, coordinator dependent?
The answer is it depends. So yeah. There are a couple things that are really good indicators for you. If you can find running backs that have a positive ADOT, they seem to be more sticky year over year as far as holding on to a large target share. Because what will happen to some backs that you'll see, like Najee Harris is a really good example, right? As a rookie, had that nice season as far as his targets. You had Ben Roethlisberger checking the ball down, but they had some injuries and different things going on in the receiving corps. There can be certain drivers. So if you've got you saw this with AJ Dillon some last year. You're like, dude, like, how's AJ Dillon like getting targets whenever we get and we get Aaron Jones in the game sometimes and he's not? And what it comes back to is, if a quarterback doesn't have multiple other weapons, like, to throw the ball down the field to, quarterbacks really do want to throw downfield. Mm-hmm. But if they only have one primary option, then you're more quickly moving to that dump off option. Whereas when you have positive ADOT guys, they're really more built into the structure of a play, right? Where they have a better chance to be the first read. So maybe the running back's running an angle route underneath, and then you have a tight end running the seam route. The quarterback's reading high to low, but now the running back is the first or second read based on where the safety starts. Whereas if you're the swing pass guy, you're the third or fourth read, or you might be the hot against the blitz. And then you got to factor in, well, what if the quarterback just wants to take off? Which, by the way, I think is the biggest potential issue for Gibson in the short term this year would be if Sam Howell starts and all of a sudden he's rushing and scrambling all the time, right? That could hurt Antonio Gibson. So it really does depend. But what I found is you're going to get a more sticky running back you can really count on more often, like a Kamara, a CMC, Eckler. They're typically positive A-dot guys. The others can more come and go. It just depends on the rest of the weapons and if the quarterback feels the need to more highly integrate the running back in, because they're just not open. The other guys just aren't open.
Okay, Gibbs. Are you going to buy back into Gibson? And I will say, I think one of the things that I've seen from this offseason that I like is talk about Eric Bieniemy's offense, and there's a little bit of mystery. Like, I think people have gone too far in saying it won't look anything like what the Chiefs did because he didn't have anything to do with what the Chiefs did. I don't believe that's true. I think he was a big part of that, and I think that he'll probably have success in Washington. But that one of the reports we've gotten is there's a lot of screens, a lot, both to wide receivers and to running backs. That'd be awesome for Gibson, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely buying in. I think Dwayne laid it out really well. That was really interesting thinking about the running back position through the lens of average depth of target. I've never thought about that. With Gibson, my concern is his rushing efficiency was like way, way down last year, and that's happened in back-to-back years. He was also less efficient in terms of creating yards after the catch. I don't know, man. I have such a hard time with it because, like, yeah, I have an emotional attachment to him, and then seeing like those stats all come down as well, like, it's easier to just be like, nah. But everyone's doing that. And so, like, to get him at his price, I think is definitely
I think the nice thing with him is that you're buying really low.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to cost you a whole lot in terms of opportunity cost to go take a chance on him. A guy who I'm struggling with a little bit right now in Dynasty and in redraft is Ramondre Stevenson. Because you look at yards per route run last year, and he was one of the most efficient backs, I think, in football. You look at yards per target, and he was one of the least efficient. And the main difference was, I think he was third or fourth in the NFL on screens. Now you've got a new offensive coordinator, and we get a whole offseason of them talking about wanting to use somebody else in the passing game. Does Stevenson's profile look like somebody that's going to hold on to his target share, Dwayne?
I think he's more questionable. But
yeah.
To be at a 26% targets per route run, it's really hard to do that and be a fluke. Now, he's not a positive A-dot guy. He is more of a swing pass, a check down. And just think about this. The Patriots don't have anyone else. Like, they don't have really good. I mean, it is what it is. They don't have really good receivers. They had Jacoby Myers last year, right? You have Hunter Henry, some guys Hunter Henry they invested in, you know, but it didn't really turn out. Jonnu Smith didn't work out. Devontae Parker, you know, got his new contract. But they just don't have the weapons. So you will see teams that do that. Throw the ball more to the backs and create those screen plays. But I think he's still probably a plus receiver, not as high end as what some people might think. Like, that 26% is probably a tad misleading, but I think his baseline is still probably a 20-22% targets per route run kind of guy. He's got good hands, very natural catcher, like, of the football and stuff, but not like this great mismatch player against linebackers and safeties that, you know, can just really create all this separation and zone. He's more of a check down guy.
So we did answer one of the questions, one of your favorite buys, and we got into the running back question like I wanted to. Who's your second favorite buy based on per route data?
Mine's Christian Watson, and his is even larger than that. But, you know, targets per route run, I know Jacob's going to do a breakdown later of really the use cases for targets per route run. I think it's really important because it is funny. You'll say something about targets per route run on Twitter and somebody like, oh man, you know, yards per route run correlates more to fantasy points. And that's true, but duh, because it's got yards in it. Yards, right, are part of scoring fantasy points. What we're looking for are certain signals that some kind of data is giving us. And targets per route run, back to your first question, which was about running backs, I really love it for running backs because some backs have to stay in and block more, right? Some backs actually get to run more pass routes. Some running backs, you know, we don't get to see them on the field because they have a third down back. So targets per route run tells us so much more about that running back than target share because they were hamstrung by playing time. And so when you look at a guy like Watson, you know, speaking of hamstrings, like, you've got injuries that keep him on or off the field throughout the season. You know, you've got rookies early on that may not get as much playing time. And so an easy way to just kind of cut through all of that, and I don't got to worry about which games he was in, which games, you know, he was out, all that kind of stuff, like, as I can quickly look at targets per route run. And so most people, when you talk about Christian Watson, almost always they will come back and say, yeah, man, 15% target share. And I'm like, yeah, bro, 24% targets per route run, 23% target share in the games. Yes, I will go break it down if I have to. 23% target share in the games where he was fully healthy and did not leave due to concussions and things like that. So once he got into a full-time role, he showed that he could be the top guy in the offense. And yes, I get it. He can't score a touchdown on 2.6% of his routes. It's not possible, right? You just can't do it. It's an outlier season. But he has the ability to still be a good touchdown scorer, right? I mean, we have a guy that can beat you over the top. We have a guy that can catch a slant and erase angles. We have a guy that can take an end around and score touchdowns. So we like guys that can score from anywhere. So when you piece those two things together and you think about Watson's potential, like I absolutely love him. He's got the second round capital. I think the biggest thing holding people off is the age, and he comes from a small school. But this is kind of normal. We see these small school guys come out and they're older. Is anybody afraid of Cooper Kupp now?
Right.
He was old when he came out and he came from a small school. So not saying Watson's going to be Cooper Kupp. Like, that's a super extreme example. But I think people are holding on a little too tightly to their pre-draft, you know, thoughts around Christian Watson versus his draft capital and what we saw him do in year one.
So, Jacob, we see a lot of times when it's these yards per route run lists, the guys who are going to explode next year, it's the rookies. It's the guys who either didn't really start playing full-time until midway through the year, which I think was the ARSB case going into his year two. I know you had a couple of rookies or second-year guys on your list in terms of buys, Drake London and Chris Olave. Is Watson in that group with those guys?
I have a tough time classifying him as a buy for Dynasty because I think people are really, really getting hyped on him and pushing him up the board a lot, and to the point where the question marks that still exist around his data is a real concern. Like, I love all the Perret stuff that we can spout off about Watson, but at the end of the day, he ran fewer than 300 routes. And this brings up an important question that I would pose to Dwayne. Like, is there a qualifier? Is there a route run total where you find stickiness? For me, it's been typically around 300 or 350 routes. But like in a season, is there a qualifier that you go to?
250, but targets 250 per route run stabilizes before yards per route run. Yards per route run does take longer. And it's because of variance, right? You get big plays that can really make it look better than it is, but a player's ability to earn targets is something that stabilizes a lot quicker. I say a lot. It's slightly quicker. So typically by like six games, you have a really good feel for targets per route run. It might take you closer to eight, depending on the team, you know, or the player, especially if they're in a limited role, right, for yards per route run. And I don't know, honestly. I'll be honest. Like, I've been so focused on redraft and best ball. Like, so yeah. I love Christian Watson's profile, but I will say I would agree on the caveats I would give around him. It is definitely around small sample size.
Yeah.
However, I think what kind of offsets that is when you get a player that shows they can earn targets but also do a lot with them, and then it matches like what their profile is, right? Which is this dude's super fast and it's actually working like on a football field. So I don't know where he's priced at right now, like what wide receiver he is in Dynasty. But if it is something where he's getting steamed, I do agree that like you have to take the caveat that the sample size is small.
I'm pretty sure. I think it's between 15 and wide receiver 15, wide receiver 20, most places.
I would buy there. Yeah. I would be buying him there. Yeah.
I feel like I see him go inside the top 15. I love everything about Watson that we saw. Like the small sample size caveat is all there really is to say, because outside of that, like everything is excellent. What's particularly exciting is his ability to draw targets at such a high rate while running such deep routes. So over the past five seasons, only Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Chris Olave, and Watson have a target per route run rate of 25% or higher with an average depth of target of 14 plus yards. And that's the type of upside that we're looking at for him. If he can draw targets at such a high rate while running such downfield routes, like that's really, really exciting. And we've seen him also dominate man coverage, which is another really good signal for a young receiver and the type of receiver that he is as a field stretching perimeter threat. So everything that we saw was excellent for Watson, and I definitely like him. If we're going to get to London, we're going to get to Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Like those guys, their per route data is like off the page elite, comes in a legitimate sample size. And like, I don't have any question marks about them compared to Watson.
More of a bulletproof type floor than it is necessarily a higher ceiling, I think. We're going to talk that. I think we kind of just hit on one of the use cases, but Jacob's going to break down the rest of them right after this.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Okay, Jacob, you kind of came up with three use cases for per route data. Like, how is this going to help us identify future fantasy success, right?
Yeah. I've been super excited to have Dwayne on for this very reason, because I think people, for some reason, like, I have an aversion to per route data. I think maybe just because it's new, but there are some instances where it's really, really important. And so I brought up three. Feel free to add anything to this, Dwayne. The first one is players whose route totals were suppressed by injury. And so a couple recent use cases, Davante Adams of 2019 only had 997 yards, 5 touchdowns in 12 games. And so he was able to be had at the end of round one, even the round 1-2 turn. And then he just absolutely went nuts the next year. And we saw in that season where he only played 12 games, he drew target on 30% of his routes, which was by far the highest of his career, and followed an upward trajectory that he had been on. And then the next years, he elevated that even further and just lit fantasy on fire. Another guy is 2020 Deebo Samuel. So his target per route run rate rose from 21% to 26% in 2020, but he only played 7 games. He then goes on for 1,400 yards the next year. So those are the two from an injury standpoint that like clearly stand out. And it's just, you can find players like this through this lens where people don't understand like truly what the potential is if their per route data is actually extrapolated over a larger sample size. And I'm curious if you guys have any players that come to mind as 2023 examples.
Well, I would just echo what you said. I think those are the right use cases. If you've got a full sample of data for a player, obviously we would rather just use target share, right? Mm-hmm. It still correlates more highly to fantasy points. Stickiness year over year, they're actually pretty close. So that is kind of a misnomer that's out there. Sometimes I'll hear people say like, oh, targets per route run aren't even actually sticky. I'm like, no, they are. Like they're pretty sticky year over year. Not quite as close as target volume or as just actual targets, but they're really close. But I think those are the great like examples, you know, that you just laid out. I will say I do love them for running backs and tight ends as well, not just wide receivers. And like tight ends, you guys know, like, for example, let's look at Tyler Higbee last year. Not saying this guy's a dynasty buyer or anything, but had a 24% targets per route run. But you look at after week 5, all the offensive line injuries that the Rams had, and you see suddenly his route participation dropped to 67%. Why? Because he had to block. He had to stay right in and block. So that's another great use case. If you've got a tight end that just was only out there running a route 60% of the time, that's a scenario that comes up a lot, right? So then you suddenly find a guy that maybe, or you had a guy like Dallas Goedert that forever was stuck with Zach Ertz. Oh, I wonder what Dallas Goedert could be without like Zach Ertz. Like I think there's a pretty good stat like that we could look at for that. So I think those are really good use cases. And I already talked about the running backs earlier, you know, because they can get split up in their roles, but really good ways to, when you don't have that full data set and you're trying to say, okay, based on what we have, what could we potentially do? And I actually use targets per route run in my projection model. I project the routes that are going to be run, the route participation, and that trickles down, you know, from the team offense, right? You know, how many plays I think they're going to run, how often they're going to pass, and then I assign route participation to each player, and then targets per route run. Those two things together give you their target share.
I think that's I'm going to stay there for just a second. I know it's kind of off topic of where we were originally going with this show, but that idea of projecting the number of plays a team or number of routes a team's going to have and dealing with a team like Tampa Bay this year. Because I think when you look at the Buccaneers through that lens and the type of environment that Chris Godwin and Mike Evans production has come from the past 2 years, where they're throwing 750 passes per game and Tom Brady's the quarterback, I have a hard time thinking they're going to be above league average in terms of pass rate this year. I think if they have their way, they're playing in a bad division. Their defense is probably better than their offense. and they've got a defensive head coach, and they've probably got Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask throwing passes. So, like, I get really concerned about a team that might throw it 150, 200 fewer times. How much do you think about normalizing those run and pass rates? Like, for, and I think on the opposite side would be a team like Atlanta that just threw the ball so little. And like, if you project them based on what they did last year, there's very few routes, not enough for London and Pitts probably.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So for Tampa Bay, like, the major challenge they're going to have is they're only favored, I believe, in three, maybe two games on the 18-game schedule per Superbook, right? So they're only projected to win 6.5 games. So I do think that, to some extent, that will force them to pass, because right, that means they're just going to be trailing all the time. But I also believe that everything else you just said will be true. I think you still have a defensive-minded coach, and he knows that he doesn't have Tom Brady. So even though he's going to be trailing, and we saw this last year, it wasn't just the Falcons. We saw the Panthers do this last year. They were trailing a lot, and they still decided, okay, that may be the case, but we don't think that passing the ball is necessarily the best thing to do still. You know, and they had some injuries. You had P.J. Walker. You had Baker Mayfield in there. Oh, wait, Baker Mayfield. We're back to the Bucs. You know, Kyle Trask, you just mentioned. So with the quarterback issues and all those things, I'm with you. Like, I have their plays per game projected at 61 this year. Still throwing, dropping back to pass, 62%. Obviously, that can turn into a scramble, a sack, other things. And 38% of the time actually choosing to have a designed run. But like, if this was, you know, the Bucs last year, I would have that number at 70 with Brady, right? 70% pass play, or like 68, 67, somewhere in there. So definitely toning it down. And then for like the Falcons, just since you mentioned them, like, I actually have them going up in pass rate. Right. Number one, because they were so outlier crazy run heavy last year. It is so hard to do. And when you take the running quarterback like Marcus Mariota away, that is going to change the dynamic. Yeah, Desmond Ritter's willing to scramble, had an 8% scramble rate last year. That's definitely above the league average, which is usually around 5-6%. But it's not like huge. We're not talking Justin Fields, who scrambled 16% of the time. So I think on that alone, like, you're going to, without Mariota being part of the design run game, you're going to naturally see more passing from Atlanta. They'll still be a run heavy team.
Right.
But last year they dropped back to pass 49% of the time. That's like bananas. I have them at 54% this year, which is right in line with what Arthur Smith used to do with the Titans, right? In an offense that didn't necessarily have the run, when he didn't have Mariota, didn't have the running quarterback, and it was with Tannehill. So I think we get slight, you know, regression to the mean, you know, in opposite directions, like for both teams.
Right. And I think even if I don't have a reason with a team like the Falcons that's that far off of what everyone else did, I'm still going to pull back a little bit. I think we have a couple of reasons to think. I've got about 501 pass attempts, and it's like 80 more times than they threw the ball last year. But also, I think fewer pass attempts than I have projected for any other team in 2023. So that's just kind of the way that is. And that kind of goes to one of the things, Jacob, that was on your list, right? The way that scheme can kind of disguise a yards per route round superstar.
Yeah, before I get to that, I do have to mention Kadarius Toney, because it's a per route data episode and we have to. But yeah, he would be the guy I would bring up as the clear, like, this player's been injured, but his per route data indicates that he could be awesome. Like, I don't know if he's going to be Debo Samuel, but like, from a per route perspective, he like has that potential. Only four players over the past years have a higher target per route run rate than Kadarius Toney. That's Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Chris Olave.
I'm not sure that you get to question the sample size of Christian Watson and then bring us Kadarius Toney.
Well, it's about the same, the 2-year sample size. But yeah, no, it's definitely a small sample size. And that's what I'm saying, though, is like, that's why we look at this data, because it could be something.
I think Kadarius Toney and Elijah Moore, you could make the argument, have the widest range of outcomes. Because I've been kind of thinking through this, doing this thing I call a projection spectrum. I don't know what your thoughts are, Jacob, but like, I think that's two that have like the widest range. Like, I put out a tweet last night on Elijah Moore. I'm like, okay, you've got, you know, you got Deshaun Watson like he was last year, and Elijah Moore plays like he did last year. Basically, like, you can't even use Elijah Moore. But if you get rookie season Elijah Moore and you get vintage Deshaun Watson, like, we could have a guy that's like a wide receiver too. Like, you could literally, I mean, it's hard to find ranges, realistic ranges of outcomes for players that are that wide. And I think Kadarius Toney is actually another very similar one. And I think it all comes back to, he's going to get targets when he's out there. The question is, if he gets more routes, will it scale? And then I think the other question is, great, if he doesn't, you know, get more routes, like, then what? Like, because I do worry. Last year, I mean, come on, like, even when they really needed someone to step up and be on the field, even when he was healthy, it's like they never would really, like, I think his max, Jacob, like you probably have in front of you, I think his max route participation was like 30% one game.
Right.
You know, so that's my concern. Do they look at him more as like, so I've got him projected in the middle, 50% route participation, playing the Mecole Hardman role, and that's my median. But to your point, Jacob, like the ceiling on it, like if he does go to like 85% and he does sustain his targets per route run, yeah, hello, like it could be a wide receiver one.
Yeah, and I don't even want to get started talking about Elijah Moore's target per route run rates because I spent so much time doing that after his rookie year, and yeah, look where we are. Yeah, so the next one would be players whose route totals were suppressed by role. And this actually brings up Elijah Moore as a good example from his rookie year, Sky Moore last year. And then the examples, the use cases that we have from the past, Heath already mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown, limited role early on, but 33% target per route run rate from week 13 on in his rookie year, which is like something that you don't do unless you have the potential to be an absolutely elite fantasy wide receiver one. Tyreek Hill is actually the other one that I would bring up. So year two, Tyreek Hill was drafted as the wide receiver 23 in fantasy going into the year because he only ran 259 routes as a rookie, but his per route data as a rookie was nuts. 32% target per route run rate, 2.3 yards per route run. And so then even in year two, when his per route rates dropped off, his target per route run rate was quite a bit lower over a larger sample size. He still finishes the wide receiver 8. And that was, I think, honestly, on the lower end of his potential ranges of outcomes. He didn't score a lot of touchdowns. And that just goes to show, like, when this is extrapolated over a larger sample size, it doesn't even have to stay at the absurd rates like we saw with Christian Watson or whatever. If it's just close to that and they do get the role, then these players can go nuts. And that's why we're so excited about somebody like Christian Watson. Another guy I'd bring up is Chika Conquo from the Titans. His per route data last year is absolutely absurd. And I'm really curious what you think about him, Dwayne.
Yeah, I like Chig. He is an interesting player, though, because a lot of that came on screens and gimmicks, you know? Yeah. So how much of that do they keep installed? Also, like, do they see him really more as kind of a, you know, an H-back that they're moving around versus a true F move around or inline tight end? I think that's our biggest question. If Chig gets to 75% route participation this season, I think he's going to be a lock to be in the top 12 tight ends. And then it just becomes a matter of ceiling. Because to your point, even if they don't do as much of the gimmicky stuff for him, like he's still going to have a baseline that's better than most tight ends in his ability to earn targets. Yeah, it was a small sample. But for me, like once I get past like tight end 9 or 10 this year, I'm kind of like, you know, just give me the guy that, you know, if I am right, all of his underlings actually line up with the best tight ends in the game. Yes, we acknowledge small sample, so it could go wrong, but I'd rather take a swing on that upside, especially at tight end, where, look, say it's a miss, I can go grab someone else. I can grab just somebody to plug in off the waiver wire, you know, if I just need them, you know, or if I need to stream, but you're not going to find many profiles like Chig.
Yeah, and it's that whole, can he go from being a 40, 50% player to being, like you said, run 70% of the routes? I do think the way that Jacob has the Antonio Gibson, like, withdrawal, I just see Jonnu Smith whenever people say Chig Okonkwo. And it's not fair because they're not the same kind of guy. But
I think Albert O is the other one.
The Albert O because you got the OK. And who knows? He might do the same thing to Greg Dulcich this year. I don't think we have any idea what's going to happen with the Denver tight ends. Do you have one more group here, Gibbs?
Yeah, the last one is players whose route totals were suppressed by their offensive scheme. And so AJ Brown is the clear example here. AJ Brown ranked second in targets per route run across the 2020 and 2021 seasons, second out of all players, but he topped out with 1,075 yards as his single season high during that time because his single season high in routes run was 406, which is really, really low for a player who was like mostly healthy. So then he goes to Philadelphia, he runs 577 routes. So even with his target per route run rate falling from 28 to 30% down to 25%, he still erupts for 1500 yards. And I think just on him specifically, I'm really excited to see what happens in year two, if he's able to elevate the target per run rate to something resembling what we have seen in Tennessee. and the route total stays intact, like it could be nuts. We just had Ben Gretsch on Beyond the Box Score with JJ Zacharyson to talk about RPOs and the effect that RPOs have on target distributions. And like Philadelphia was the clear use case where on an RPO, there's really only one read. It's a run where there's no target at all, or it's a throw to the guy who's like running the slant. And so because of this, the target distribution ends up being very concentrated. You should go read Ben's Substack if you haven't. It's phenomenal. But like just because of that, the players like in Miami, in Philadelphia, in Atlanta are able to get these really absurd target shares. And I think it's possible we can see even more than what we saw last year from AJB.
So like the clear guy here is Drake London, right?
Yes. Like if we're looking at 2023 examples, I think Drake London, Kyle Pitts, you could bring up Chris Olave as well as a guy whose route total was a bit suppressed and we could see more passing in that offense and his per route data is absolutely nuts. But yeah, we can go on and on and on about London and Pitts. There's so many cool stats. I want to ask you, Dwayne, do you use first down target data as at all? That's something that I look at. First down targets have been worth about 20% more fantasy points than other targets. There's fewer defensive backs on the field on first downs, and it also just signals a team's willingness to like go to a certain player. And Drake London's numbers really stand out in that regard. Is that something you look at?
I've looked at it. Like I just, and I'm not saying that it doesn't work. I just haven't found it to have like enough of a differentiating signal for me. Like I look at third and fourth down as well. Like when the quarterback absolutely needs it, who are they going to? Right. I also look at end zone targets. And overall, what I've found is like the guys that really earn targets, like they're just earning targets all the time.
For sure.
It's kind of like with this first read stuff. Like I see the first read stuff too. And I've had access to that with PFF and I like it. It's cool. But guess what? Like 70%, 68 to 70% of targets are first read, period, for everyone. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like if you earn a lot of targets, you're going to get a lot of first read targets. I think these things are really cool. Like the thing I love to look at, honestly, is like the percentage of targets that for the player that come from play action.
Yeah.
Because play action has proven to be worth about 20% more than a non-play action target. And that's something that can happen, you know, really on any down and distance. You're not going to get it on like third and long when you know you're getting a blitz. Like you don't want to turn your back to the defense at that moment. They're not biting on the play action in that moment. But most of the other down and distances, it's available to you. And it just freezes the linebacker and safety enough that you let these, you know, playmakers get in behind or in between coverage in the zone where, you know, 70% of coverage in the NFL nowadays is zone coverage. And it can be huge, especially for guys like AJ Brown that are athletes. Mm-hmm. Treylon Burks could fall into that bucket this year. That's how he could really see like a boom this year. We know it's going to be a run heavy offense, but can he hit it in efficiency? So yeah, I like looking at all those things. Most of it still seems to tie back though to their ability to earn targets overall. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like works across all the buckets.
Yeah, play action targets are cheat codes. And I think it's important to bring that up related to Drake London, who is going to fill the AJ Brown role in Arthur Smith's offense. The reason I brought up first down targets, I think the point you made up about drawing targets on third down is just as important. I think that's totally valid. To me, it shows that a team is willing to run an offense through a player. And if you look at the players who have high first down targets, it's Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, DJ Moore, CeeDee Lamb. It's those guys. Drake London had the second highest last year of any player, and that's really, really unusual for a rookie. And that's why I bring it up, is because like he's coming in doing that as a 21-year-old, and they didn't have a lot of options. But still, that happens regularly with rookie receivers where they come in an offense that doesn't have options, and they don't draw targets at the rate that he did on first down. So 35% first down target per round rate. The only other rookies that have done that, Calvin Johnson, AJ Green, Julio Jones, AJ Brown, Andre Johnson, Tyreek Hill.
So I really appreciate you putting DJ Moore in there with the Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, just for me. But I don't want you to think that I didn't see that DJ Moore was on the sell list. We're going to postpone that until about the 56-minute mark, so hopefully not as many people hear it. Let's talk some dynasty buys here real quick. And I think we talked about it before, like the second-year wide receivers, particularly this class of second-year wide receivers, everybody seems to be pretty excited about them. And we've already talked about Watson. You had Chris Olave and Drake London on your list, but I think you throw Garrett Wilson in there. Those guys all had good data. And so we'll start with you, Jacob, and then Dwayne, you can kind of talk about your favorite of the group or whatever Jacob misses, because I'll probably be something.
I don't know. I don't know that there's going to be anything he misses. He's pretty thorough.
But also, I think all three of those guys, and you referenced it with Olave, like maybe this offense, there's more routes to be run now. Maybe they throw it more. They were a really low volume offense, and they had the quarterback change. Garrett Wilson's got what we hope is a monstrous change in the quality of his targets. Drake London, we think there's no way they can throw that little. So I guess both kind of who do you like best based on what they put in terms of the data, but also whose situation might be changing the most positively?
Of the rookies?
Yeah. Well, of those three particularly. I think Olave, Wilson, and London are kind of in a different class from the other guys.
Yeah. I think Wilson is the one who's going to see the most dramatic change, but that's already priced in. He's like the wide receiver 3 or 4 in Dynasty. Chris Olave is the guy who I'm interested in. And Drake London, for all the reasons we just gave. Drake London is insane. If you just look at his target per route run rate, his like first year freed of Michael Pittman and Monroe St. Brown, he drew targets at the highest per route run rate of anybody we've seen in the past 5 years. And then he comes in and immediately does it at the NFL level. He's nuts. Chris Olave is also, and his comes more from the yard per route run rate side of things. So wide receivers aged 22 or younger over the past 10 seasons to average 2.4 yards per route run. We've got Chris Olave, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, Odell Beckham, Josh Gordon, and Sammy Watkins. And young Sammy Watkins was insane.
Yeah, he breaks a lot of these lists. A lot of these lists you see like, okay, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, Sammy Watkins.
And Olave is like Watson, where he's drawing such high target rates while running such deep routes. And it's exciting. Derek Carr was really bad last year, but Derek Carr is very aggressive in pushing the ball downfield. Andy Dalton was the least aggressive quarterback in pushing the ball downfield against man coverage. And that's somewhere where Olave shines. And so I'm really excited to see him get more of those opportunities this year. And one thing I would bring up with Olave's per route run data, and it's more relevant to Rashid Shaheed, who gets brought up a lot through yard per route run. Receivers with only two receivers on the field see a huge boost in their yard per route run rate. So formation is definitely affecting things. So with one receiver on the field last year, the average yard per route run rate was 2.01. With two receivers on the field, it was 1.9. And then when you get three or more receivers on the field, it drops to 1.4. So that's a pretty drastic drop off. And that's worth noting with Chris Olave and then also Jalen Waddle, who we're going to get into because he has really absurd per route data. But yeah, of those three, I think Garrett Wilson sees the biggest upgrade. Olave is the one who I'm buying.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think you have it in the right order. Obviously, Wilson getting Aaron Rodgers, you know, that's huge for him. Olave is a guy that I've talked a lot about, like this offseason. So if you take it a little further than just like looking at the targets per route run, like another thing I really like to use is PFF receiving grade, especially for rookies. It's got a really strong track record. I put out some research on it last year. And if you look at the comps that come up by using the targets per route run and the PFF receiving grade and the yards per route run, these are Olave's, Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, Jamar Chase, Odell Beckham Jr. And look at Doug Baldwin sneaking in there. Like Doug Baldwin, so underrated. That was back in 2011 when he was a rookie. And he was undrafted. So, it's a who's who's list. Like, and Olave just, any one of us can make a list right now of like our favorite data points that we know correlate highly to future fantasy points. And Olave just pops on it. So I like the upgrade with Carr you mentioned. I think London might be the best out of the group. I think he might actually be the best player, but we still have the most questions continuing. Yeah, we could get regression, you know, towards the mean as far as, you know, remaining run heavy, but throwing the ball more, but we just don't know. Like Desmond Ridder, we have no clue. Like, we just don't know if he can be a good quarterback or not. Taylor Heineke, like, actually surprisingly, like, he kind of helped, you know, Terry McLaurin get on a heater in the middle of the year last year. And then Jahan Dotson did it at the end of the year. And he actually over the last six games he was in, he supported multiple top 24 guys a couple of times, which surprised me. I didn't even remember that. Like Taylor Heineke, wow, like look at you. So maybe that's a break glass in case of emergency. But like, if I just had to pick on pure talent across all three of these guys, Garrett Wilson was my number one graded guy coming out of the class. But after year one, like, man, it was so close between him and Drake London. Like just pure talent, I think Drake London might have the highest ceiling as far as being the one that we could look up and be like, wow, like 32% target share. Like that just really happened. I think Drake London could do that.
Okay, Jacob, we've talked about like the high end, the highest of the high end. I think we've covered most of the top 12 dynasty wide receivers. I think there's going to be someone in Houston. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but somebody in Houston this year who's really going to benefit from playing with CJ Stroud. I think he's going to be better as a passer than people are expecting right now. I think the fantasy community got a little bit down because, well, he's not going to run, so why should we care? But I think he had a chance to come in as a rookie quarterback and be really good for these wide receivers. You had a note here on Nico Collins as a buy. Sell me on it being him over anyone else, because there's like six guys there, and I'm not really sure which one the best is going to be.
Yeah, so Nico Collins' injury, he's another one to bring up where injuries plagued his season, but the per route data was really, really exciting. He actually finished with more targets and receiving yardage in year two than year one, even though his route total was much lower. That's because his per route rate skyrocketed. So 17% target per route rate as a rookie, up to 23%. In year two. And then if you look at his routes run without Brandon Cooks on the field, that goes up quite a bit as well. I think it's around 25%. And so we're replacing Brandon Cooks. I think Robert Woods is going to be on the field a lot, honestly. he knows the offense. He's the best blocking receiver. They are a running offense. And like, I think he's going to play a lot, and like, he's not going to draw targets. And I think Nico, they've shown a willingness to let him be the guy. We saw him come back in week 10 and record target totals of 10, 7, 9, and 10. And what's exciting about him is he's similar to Watson. He's similar to Olave, where he's drawing these targets deep down the field. So he accounted for 44% of Houston's air yards while on the field last year, which is a top five rate among players just looking within the lens of while they were on the field. So yeah, there's a lot of really exciting data points around Nico Collins' second season. Again, small sample size, but is he somebody that you're into, Duane?
Man, I love him. I put out a thread last week on Twitter about like just so far in best ball season, these are like the absolute like sleepers you should be drafting all the time. And Nico was, I only listed four players. I did one player at each position, and Nico was the wide receiver that I brought up. You can get him in around 11 or 12 right now over on Underdog. I love him for the same reasons that you just talked about in Dynasty. So going back to 2011, last year. And so what I do is I take these data points that correlate most strongly to fantasy points. And then I basically look at, okay, what are those thresholds look like for a wide receiver one? And this is in PPR, right? So that would be wide receiver 1 to 12, then wide receiver 2, 13 to 24. People kind of get the gist of that. But he had a wide receiver 3 worthy target share and target rate. So that's targets per route run last year. He had a wide receiver 1 worthy air yard share last year in his second season. And then the other qualitative metrics, you know, yards per route run. He was a wide receiver 3 worthy player. And also quarterback will impact your yards per route run. Targets per route run, you earn it. Maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not. But think about it. For yards, the more accurate the pass, the more likely you are to run after the catch. You don't have to stop and come back and catch something. Then the DB immediately tackles you. So your yards per route run actually get better. So like Marquise Valdes-Scantling to post like a whatever it was, a 1.65. And people are like, oh man, look, he got. But that's with Patrick Mahomes. Like with Patrick Mahomes, like you should just have a 2, period. Like just for being alive. Like 1.65 is bad. But when you're playing with the quarterback situation that you had in Houston, what Nico did, actually, if you adjust for his quarterback play, he looks more like a wide receiver 2, also a wide receiver 3 worthy PFF receiving grade. Here's the other cool thing. The immediate response I got is, well, yeah, that's just because Brandon Cooks was hurt. Number one, we don't care. People should learn their lesson, like with Amon Ra. Remember that? Oh man, TJ Hawkinson was out. DeAndre Swift was out. And we're like, yeah, but like, kind of got to be good to get like a 30% target share. Well, with Brandon Cooks on the field last year, 24% target share for Nico Collins. So he did it with Brandon Cooks on the field. He did it with Brandon Cooks off the field. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he can win down the field. So a lot of opportunity for him. So a guy that I think the trajectory on him is great will be one of my most drafted players this season.
And I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think Nico Collins actually has a bigger upgrade at quarterback this year than Chris Olave.
I think that's possible.
It was really bad in Houston. I will piggyback off of Duane's point about the team affecting yard per route run data. So I measure wide receivers relative to their wide receiver teammates, and the discrepancy that Nico Collins had in terms of his yard per route run rate compared to his receiver yard per route run rates was higher than somebody like Christian Kirk, who really didn't have any other clear wide receiver, like talented wide receiver teammates. No, you know, offense to Zay Jones. Higher than Brandon Ayuk, higher than Deontay Johnson, higher than DJ Moore, who like is playing with no other wide receivers on his team, higher than Michael Pittman. It's almost as high as like Jamar Chase and Drake London. And Drake London is another guy who didn't have quality wide receivers on his team. he was 31% better in terms of yard per run than his wide receiver teammates. Drake London was. Nico Collins was 26% better. So like that, it is important to use that context of like, yeah, his yard per run rate wasn't very high, but like, man, it was bad in Houston last year. I am buying so much Nico Collins and so much Damian Pierce right now, and it has me very scared.
Well, you know, like, you need CJ Stroud to be good.
Nobody's ever gone wrong buying day three running backs after a good, surprisingly good rookie year. That's the formula for success. We've got a couple more buys to get to. We've got a handful of sells, including Jacob explaining himself on DJ Moore. We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll run through the rest of those.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, it's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Okay, a couple of guys that did not do very much last year, Jacob. One who didn't even play last year, Calvin Ridley, Rashad Bateman, both on your buy list. We're going to have to move a little bit quicker through these guys. So give me your 30-second elevator pitch on that. And you tell me, Dwayne, which one you're buying, which case you're buying more.
Yeah, can we throw it to Dwayne first? I'm really curious to hear what he thinks about Calvin Ridley.
Okay.
Yeah, so are we talking yourselves or you're talking the
guys? We're still on buys. Oh, okay. Ridley and Bateman. Now,
okay, yeah. So, yeah, I'm going with Ridley. But I mean, I like both players. Like the thing with Ridley is we know the last time we saw him before his 6-game, you know, season, the last full season we saw him in, like it looked like he was like maybe about to just kind of go like alpha for us, right? Now it's been a while since he's been around the game. Like obviously he's older, but I'm still leaning into him. Now, having said all that, like he's so pricey, like people are not giving me really any sort of discount. Maybe they are in Dynasty, but like right now he's a round 3 pick on Underdog. It's like, okay, like, well, okay, here we go. I guess we're just going to be all in right away on Calvin Ridley.
So right.
There's definitely a little bit of concern for me, but like he's got the first round pedigree. He got better each year, you know, had a little bit of a little bump at the end, you know, in his short period with Arthur Smith before like he, you know, left the team for mental health reasons and then ultimately gets suspended. So I'm still going to lean into him. I think that he's actually shown us. Bateman, man, is a guy I loved out of college, and he did have a really good target per route run and yard per route run last season. But it was on such a small sample, right? It didn't even get to the numbers that Jacob and I have outlined so far as being, okay, like it can kind of stabilize at this point. So like both players, but definitely more in on Calvin Ridley than Rashad Bateman.
I think Ridley's price in Dynasty is more where I'm excited to buy because he's 28 years old and like people are just like, you're dead to me after you're 27 or older. And so like you can kind of get him where if he comes into the rates that we've seen in the past and a better offense here, like he could smash for 3 or 4 years and be like pretty cheap. Where he's going in Dynasty. So Bateman, I want to bring up because, like you said, his per route data in college was really, really exciting. And Zay Flowers, a lot of it was affected by his offense, but he didn't even draw targets at a high rate in college. So Zay Flowers' best single season target per route run rate at the collegiate level is 26%. Rashad Bateman's worst was 27%. In his last year, he was targeted on 40% of his routes, which is nuts. And then, yeah, only 120 routes last year, but really exciting, 23% target per route rate, 2.4 yards per route run. So we just had Matthew Harmon on Beyond the Box Score. He's a huge Bateman guy as well. I think everything we've seen is he's been really good. He's been able to win at multiple levels. And if he's healthy, he's going to be the clear wide receiver one in Baltimore, I think.
He's my favorite Raven wide receiver to draft for sure. Obviously our number one wide receiver is listed as a tight end, Mark Andrews. But yeah, after that, like I'm with you. I'm on Bateman.
The Rashad Bateman, no. And actually one guy I want to sneak into the buys is Puka Nacua. And relative to both these guys, Dwayne, I want to ask you how much you value target per route rates at the collegiate level as we translate it to the NFL level. Have you found much stickiness there?
There's some, but the signal's not as strong as like some of the traditional things we have, like yards per team pass attempt. You know, and some of it's tricky because we really only have this advanced data for college back to the 2014 season, or it might be 13. But then, like, once you need to have 4 years of data, right? You know, for players that played until they were seniors, so you can't even necessarily use all that. You gotta kind of go back to like 2017 before you can really start using this data. So, I've done a lot of research on it, but the sample size is still small. So a lot of the historical stuff. Like dominator yards per, team pass attempt, those sort of things are still carrying a stronger signal. I do weight them into my model though. So, I have the rookie supermodel over at Fantasy Life, and I did it for running back, wide receiver, tight end, and it does get a small weight in the model. And mostly I look at career for that versus, and I will, there's a small percentage that goes to like their best season that they had. And I do the same thing for yards per route run. So there is something there, but I'm really curious to see like what this looks like over like the next 4 or 5 years as we get more and more data, you know, into the pool.
So I bring him Nacua, and I think he's a really good example for per route data. Again, why it's useful. He never was able to really put together a full season at the collegiate level due to injuries and other things. But if you just look at his per route stuff, it jumps off the page. Highest target per route run rate in the class, not even close. And then if you look at elite yard per route run rates of wide receivers who have been drafted recently, 3.1, CeeDee Lamb, Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, 3.3, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 3.4, T. Higgins, 3.5, Puka Nacua, 3.6, Jaylen Waddle. Like, that's a pretty crazy list to be on. And every other player is elite. Like, obviously, Puka Nacua is not like those guys, but he does have an opportunity in LA. Someone stopped me from getting so much Puka Nacua.
Yeah, you know what? The nice thing is, like, I don't know where you're drafting him. I'm in a rookie draft right now.
He's free.
Yeah, I think he did go in like the middle of the third round, just before Tank Dell and Michael Wilson. But in that range, which is definitely more expensive than he was in May. The word's getting out a little bit. It used to be that you get to round four, round five, and he might still be there.
He was also really explosive. So 27% of his targets turned into reception of 15 plus yards or more. That's something else that I have in the model. So he checks quite a few boxes. The thing that really hurt him, is just the fact that he, you know, went later in the draft. So like that's definitely pulling down his score, like in the supermodel. His age also pulls him down a little bit. But to your point, Jacob, like he was also battling through injuries. So sometimes guys that have that over the course of their career, it's really hard to like be like, oh, yeah, I'm coming out after year three, right? When you haven't really been able to put, you know, your full career out there in front of everybody. So definitely think there's some things I like about Nacua. I like him a lot more in Dynasty. Not as into spending like my last pick in best ball on him like I see a lot of people do. Like it could work, but I think it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do fear if he's making an impact in the second half of the season, it's because things have just gone every bit as bad in Los Angeles as they did last year, and they don't have half their starters playing. But I do want to say, Dwayne, we've got five cells here, and I'm going to give you your choice. Jacob gave us five names. You can pick the one that you agree the most with, or you can pick the one that you agree the least with. But Deontay Johnson, DJ Moore, T. Higgins, DK Metcalf and George Pickens were the five guys he had here on here as dynasty sells. And I'm sure he's got good justification. You're free to take him to task or just agree with him.
Yeah. So Deontay Johnson's my one I disagree with the most, just because we've seen Deontay really be a high end target earner period, like over, you know, the course of his career. He's another guy that's had to struggle a little bit with bad quarterback play, including Ben Roethlisberger. So yards per route run don't come in quite as strong, but like his targets per route run data is strong. And like just his raw target data is really good. In fact, like he's honest, when Best Ball Mania opened, he was one of the most underpriced players, in my opinion. He was a round seven pick. Now he's gotten up to mid round six. So Dynasty, and I think people are overrating the fact that he didn't score, you know, the touchdowns last year. I think it will be hard, even with Kenny Pickett at quarterback, giving the number of targets he's going to get this year, to not score five touchdowns, you know, could score six or seven just based on like what we typically see guys that get that sort of target share. DJ Moore, like also another player that's really good, but like you're just going to need a lot of things to go right for you. I mean, I talked about Justin Fields earlier, 16% scramble rate, and he also handles 20% of the team's design rushing attempts. Like offenses that have that kind of stylistic quarterback, they don't throw the ball a lot. Now, they could open up and decide to throw it more, but I think it's like how much. That's my biggest worry with DJ Moore is he could have a 30%. I was playing around with this the other day. I was like, just give him a 30% target share, which isn't realistic. Like his targets per route run data has never supported something like that. But what if he did have that? And it's still like, oh, wow, 115-120 targets, like with what we're projecting this team. Now, again, this is a one-year view right now that I'm talking about on DJ Moore. But he's also starting to get up there a little bit. By the time if the Bears ever were at a position to maybe open up their offense, like how far away are we talking from right now? So like, I totally get that one. I'm actually, Jacob, I'm with you. I'm hitting these all super fast, but I'm with you on T. Higgins. I think he profiles more like a wide receiver 3. I give him wide receiver 2 credit because he does play with Ja'Marr Chase. But then I'm also like, hey guys, like we don't have to make the same excuse for Devonta Smith. He plays with AJ Brown and he still got his There are players that come out and still demand high targets. It is tough though. When you have high target competition, it is a factor, right? In your target share. But for me, T. Higgins is 1 year away from people drafting him in redraft more in the range that you take Terry McLaurin, right? And guys like that this year. Metcalf, I don't know, man. Like I still like him, but I don't know. Like now you add JSN. That's my biggest question. Like I really love JSN. He was number one in my rookie model. And like now you got to deal with him too. So yeah. And Pickens, I'm with you. I'm out on Pickens. Like I thought his data, it doesn't mean he can't be good. Like there's always exceptions. Like everybody wants to always use Davante Adams. Oh man, he was never good at any of those things for 3 years. And all of a sudden he exploded. Yes, there are exceptions to these rules, but realistically, when someone profiles like George Pickens, you're going to be an outlier to actually turn out to be really good.
Yeah, the per route down data for Pickens is disgusting. It's like anytime you have somebody that bad, they're not good. In his defense, like they were just using him on 9 routes. Like it was really just a terrible design all around. And so like, of course, he's not drawing targets. I brought up Deontay. Not that I think he's like a clear sell necessarily in Dynasty. In redraft, he's clearly undervalued, I think. But I just wanted to point out like that his per route data did fall off pretty significantly. 28% target per route run rate each of the past 2 years, down to 24% last year. And I think the clear reason is that he wasn't the safety blanket anymore and he was used down the field a lot more. His average route depth was 6.2 yards in each of the two previous seasons. That rose to 9.4. That's a massive jump year over year. Do you think that in this type of role, he's going to be the elite target draw that we have seen in the past? Because he wasn't last year and he was really inefficient, especially on his downfield looks last year.
Yeah, I still think that he's going to be, because the other thing that, like, just looking at this data, there's also just variance. Like there's just years where someone's at a 28% and they're at a 24%. And typically we wouldn't blink because 24% is pretty good. But when you were 28% the year before, like, yeah, it makes everyone suddenly look at it, you know, and I get it. Like, that's what we do. We analyze all these things. But I think there's a really good chance that it's just literally variance, you know, and also these efficiency stats can also have a lot of variance from year to year, just like, you know, all the stuff with drops and things like that. So I try not to overreact, especially if someone's still young and they're in their prime, like we have with Deontay Johnson. I'd be more worried if he was 31 and this was happening. Even though really the data shows that we don't necessarily get the signal we think when players get old, pretty much they just hit a cliff. Like Adam Harstead from Football Guys has done some really, really great work like in that area studying those things. But what I would say is at his age and given the start we've seen to his career, I still assume, and even last year, like I graded him as a wide receiver 1 worthy target earner. Was he as good as he was the years before? No, but still very high end. So I tend to lean into the larger sample when the player is still at the age that we're talking about with Deontay Johnson.
I would say, I think like Deontay Johnson's fantasy managers would be very pleased with some variance in his efficiency. They would like to see a year where those targets are turning into more yards and more fantasy points.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet, really. DJ Moore, we'll just talk about DJ Moore, Heath, because I know that you're upset about
it. Yeah, we'll finish
this.
Up with that.
Yeah. I've been on the DJ Moore bandwagon the whole time, but I am a little concerned about what we saw last year. His target per route rate was down to 23.6% from 26% the year before. That could just be variance, but he really didn't have much to compete with. And the stat that I brought up earlier where we're measuring wide receivers relative to wide receiver teammates, the fact that he was so pedestrian in that area is a bit of a concern for me as well. And so from a projection standpoint, he's going to have to be like Dwayne talked about, he's going to have to be one of the absolute best players in the NFL in terms of per route rates to be relevant for fantasy, to be a top 20 wide receiver.
Well, I think the big thing, and we had like Dave just got back from Chicago and was there and spent some time talking to the Bears. And he said, well, one of the real things that he came away with was that they don't want to harness Justin Fields too much, but that scramble rate that Dwayne referenced, they would really, really, really like to cut that back. They'd really like to have an offensive line that he can trust a little bit more, and for him to drop back and have a wide receiver maybe who gets open and just throw the ball and not run so often on design. Now, that's a tough thing for a quarterback like him, that's such a great athlete, to do, but it's also something that we generally see younger quarterbacks, I think, at least the ones that end up being successful, find a way to do that. And so that's one where the pass volume could go up quite a bit without the dropbacks going up that much if he could lower the sack rate and lower the scramble rate.
Yeah, I think that is possible. I think he could really help Fields, especially down the field. I will bring up, we just had a regression episode with Jared Smola, Beyond the Box Score, and we talked about DJ Moore a lot in that. And one of the reasons was his off-target rate on downfield throws, 15-plus air yards, was 55%. That was the worst in the NFL among qualified players. Kyle Pitts didn't have quite enough targets to qualify, but his was 75%, by the way. 55% off-target rate on downfield attempts. And then the other thing with DJ Moore, regression is probably headed his way, is his yards after the catch per reception was 2.9 yards last year. His career average was over 5. His lowest single-season rate was 4.5. So it was like cut in half randomly.
I think one of the difficult things, and it's Dwayne mentioned it, like when a guy's 29 or 30 and we do this, we get ourselves in trouble. There was the AJ Green's just not trying as hard because he wants out of Cincinnati, and Allen Robinson's just not trying hard because he wants out of Chicago. And it turned out both those guys just didn't have anything left. But it was a very discouraging first half of the season, especially for DJ Moore. There was a lot of outward expression of being unhappy with Baker Mayfield in that situation, which again could turn into the same thing with Justin Fields this year. All I'm going to do is just continue to defend DJ Moore.
That's fair. You've got to.
Jacob, thank
apparently
you.
I need to come on the show and defend Deontay Johnson, so maybe I'll come join you, Heath, you know, since Jacob, you know, hates our guys.
I love Deontay Johnson. Okay, I don't want to keep anti-Deontay. I just wanted to bring it up and see what you thought about the role change.
I'm messing with you, man. I just thought it was funny that we said he hasn't done it yet. I'm like, man, I got like 17.3 points per game 2 seasons ago. That was wide receiver 8. I feel pretty good about that.
Heath has just been like chastising Deontay for his yards per target forever, and like that's mainly what I meant. Like, he hasn't really done that.
But it is, like, I understand why yards per route run's more valuable than yards per target. I also know that yards per target is something that has remained remarkably low for Deontay Johnson just year after year. It's bad quarterback play, sure. But it's just that 1 year, if he had 160 targets and he had 1 year where that was 8.5 or 9, that would be a pretty massive difference in terms of his production.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it definitely ties to ADOT. It has ties to yards after the catch. Yeah. Deontay, like DJ Moore, had a weird year last year. The 2.8 yards after the catch versus the years before 5, 4.6, 5.3. But average depth of target went up. And typically those things operate inversely. As average target depth of target goes up, your yards after the catch go down. Catch rate goes down as average depth of target goes up, you know, but the trade-off is if you're catching a ball deeper down the field, you're like, who cares? I already caught it 4 yards further down the field. Like, that's an extra 4 yards on my, you know, for my reception anyway. So it kind of all, you know, some of this stuff all ends up leveling out, you know, in the end that we're micro analyzing, but definitely some ways like for Deontay to still end up as a top 12 wide receiver this year.
Well, Jacob and Dwayne, both of you, thank you so much for the information. This was a fantastic conversation. Everybody go check out what Jacob's got going on at Sportsline. Go check out what Dwayne's got going on at Fantasy Life. Check out Dwayne on Twitter, at Dwayne McFarland. Appreciate both you guys. Appreciate everybody for listening. Go enjoy the fireworks, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to
to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.